And we're holding on Kuf Yud Zayin, Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. We started talking about yesterday about the various opinions about how Eretz Yisrael was divided among the people who came into Eretz Yisrael. We had the opinion that it went strictly according to those who left Mitzrayim, and then we would say each of them got a portion, and then that portion would just be divided up among his children. We had the opinion the other way around that it went primarily according to those who came into Eretz Yisrael, but we had Hameisim Yoshim Asachayim, so it would be in effect returned to their parents who left Mitzrayim and then redivided. You even have Rashi on the Pasuk mentions three generations involved, although as we touched on briefly in Tosfos yesterday, Tosfos doesn't really like that explanation. And then we had the opinion of Reb Shimon ben Elazar, who says that basically it just goes according to that that it depends. You either got a portion by virtue of leaving Mitzrayim, or by your parents leaving Mitzrayim, or by you coming into Eretz Yisrael. So as long as either your parent was 20 when you left Mitzrayim, or you were 20 when you came into Eretz Yisrael, either way you're getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So we went through the various opinions about that. So now the Gemara brings a Siman l'Rav Tzlofchad v'Yosef Ichbo Menashe Yechoshev. These are, as usual, mnemonics for the different for a key word from each of the following statements or questions that the Gemara is going to give. So starting with Amalei R'Papa L'Abaya. So it starts. Her Papa asks Abaya, "B'shleima l'manda Amalei Yotzim Mitzrayim Neschalka Aretz." I can understand easily, according to the opinion, that Eretz Yisrael was divided up based on those who left Mitzrayim. Meaning, in other words, then that again, you could have that one person left Mitzrayim and had a and didn't and then and died in the Midbar and had a lot of children who did make it into Eretz Yisrael, and vice versa, you'd have somebody else who left Mitzrayim and had very few, if any, children who made it into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, so that's the pasuk says, "Hainu lama'at tamit nachlosay." So that explains the pasuk. Therefore, says that. For the larger group, you increase their nachla. For the smaller group, you decrease their nachla. Meaning, in other words, so fine. So we're saying that. So let's say, for example, the Rashbam brings from Sifri. Let's say, for example, you have a person who left Mitzrayim, and at the time he had 10 children, and then five of them passed away in the Midbar, and they only have the other five. So therefore, so l'rav So therefore, so those five inherit what the 10 would have. In other words, the five of them are inheriting what their brothers would have gotten. So therefore, each of them is getting twice the size, twice the portion that anybody else would. And then vice versa, if you had then vice versa, if you had a larger number of people when they left Mitzrayim. Tosfos points out, actually, Tosfos has a long discussion about it, that then in that case, so that works out as far as the l'rav tabanach losse, but how do you explain the other part of the pasuk? How do you explain the lama'at tamit nachlose, where the pasuk continues that then when you have a smaller number of people, then you give them a, then when you then you give them then you give them a lesser portion, one way or the other. Either all of them make an entirety Yisrael and each of them is getting a portion, or you have that they're inheriting their brother's portions. So Tosfos explains. Tosfos agrees, of course. They're not going to argue with the Sifri. It's a Medrash of Tanoim. They're not going to argue with it. But they explain. But they explain the Sifri. They explain the Sifri differently. So l'rav tabanach losse would be, again, if he left Mitzrayim with 10 children and all of them being over 20 years old, all of them passed away in the Midbar, but meanwhile the father then had another five children in the Midbar, and those children not being 20 years old at the time of the Meraglim, they made it into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, so each of those five is getting his own portion because he came into Eretz Yisrael, as well as he gets a portion from one of his brothers, who passed away. And Lama'at Tamit Nachlosay would be the other way around. A person left Mitzrayim with five children, all of them, five sons, all of them passed away in the Midbar, and then he had 10 more in the Midbar. So each of them would, each of them would get a lesser portion. So still the same 5 versus 10 that the Sifri says, but Tosfos is understanding it differently than Ashvan. Anyway, so that's easy enough to understand if we say that we go according to Yotz Mitzrayim. El Lamanda Omla Boya Oretz, but if you say that Eretz Yisrael is being divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, then my larav tarba nachlosa. Then what do you mean? Well, tarbu, it says in the Gemara. The actual pasuk says tarbeh. But anyway, my larav tarba nachlosa. Then what do you mean that the larger number? What do you mean that the larger the number, the more the portion? What do you mean? It doesn't go according to who left Mitzrayim. Then it goes according to who came into Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, in our scenarios over here, of people who were born in the Midbar, people who were born and passed away in the Midbar, respectively, then it wouldn't matter. So according to that opinion, what would that pasuk mean? Now, the Rashbam says the kasha is really just obviously the Tana knew the pasuk. So the question is, how do we, when we're learning the Tana's opinion that says that we go according to the Boy Oretz, the Schalka Oretz, to be exact, we said that we go according to Boy Oretz and then we give it back to their ancestors and we divide it according to them, then how do we understand the pasuk according to him? In other words, the kasha is a little bit different than usually when the Gemara asks kasha, is like, isn't this a contradiction to the Tana's opinion? Here it's more not that we know, obviously the Tana knew the pasuk, he has to explain it somehow, but how do we understand the pasuk according to that Tana? In fact, usually we have the rule when the Gemara says kasha rather than tiufta, means there is an answer, we just don't know it right now. So that would be because we're not using it to try to contradict this Tana. We're just asking, how would this Tana understand the pasuk, or how would we understand the pasuk according to that Tana?
Why is it a contradiction?
Because on the face of it, when the pasuk is saying la rav tarba nachlosa, is saying the larger the group, the more you give them an inheritance. But if you're saying that, that you go according to those who went into Eretz Yisrael, then what's la rav tarba nachlosa? Then each individual is getting his own portion. So it's not like one person or one group is getting a larger amount than the other. So in fact, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh on the pasuk says that we could for enfer, according to this opinion, we could say la rav and la ma'at doesn't mean on the individual level, it means on the level of the family. You have in the psukim over there in the census in Parshas Pinchas, right before these psukim, la rav tarba nachlosa, you have the pasuk. It lists 57 different families. There are Shevet Reuven has 4 families, and Shevet Shimon has however many, and so forth. So the idea would be within each family, la rav and la ma'at. It depends on the size of the family when they're coming into Eretz Yisrael, how much of a portion they get into Eretz Yisrael. So he says that the Gemara could have used that. So again, when the Gemara says kasha, doesn't mean that we've schlugged up that Tana. It just means that right offhand, we don't have an answer, but that could be an answer that we're not talking about on the individual level. Rather, we're talking about on the when I say family, it's more like a clan, like a large, you know, a large subdivision of the Shevet. We're talking about on that level.
On the level of the family. You can talk on the level of the Shevet. You can talk on the level of both. I don't see where the contradiction is.
So the Gemara was bothered by, we assume that Larav and Lama'at meant at the individual family level. And the question is, given that, so it doesn't matter, in other words, whether in a particular family you have one person who left Mitzrayim and then had 10 children in the Midbar, and or had 5 children in the Midbar, or whatever. Either way, if we say Leboy Arif Neschalka, that it was divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, wouldn't matter. Each one is entitled to their own individual portion, which is why the Gemara had a cash. But so again, one possible answer is we're talking about at the level of the large subdivision of the Shevet, that a subdivision that has a larger number of people is therefore getting a larger amount of land than Eretz Yisrael. But again, the Gemara had left it as kasha without getting into that level of detail. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The Gemara continues. V'omaleh Rapapa l'Abaya. Now Rapapa has another question for Abaya in this connection. B'shleim l'manda amal yotz Mitzrayim. I understand, according to the opinion, that Eretz Yisrael was divided up based on those who left Mitzrayim. Hainu dekotzavchon b'nois tzlofchod. Then we understand the complaint of b'nois tzlofchod. So they're saying that tzlofchod himself had left Mitzrayim, and therefore he's entitled to a share in Eretz Yisrael. Had he had boys, then they would yaush in his property. Now that he doesn't have boys, then they're saying, what's going to happen to his property? Why should it be that instead the portion that he should have gotten in Eretz Yisrael, why should that go to his brothers or to whatever other collateral relative? But if you're saying that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, meaning those who were counted in the census, the fact is, Tzlofchad is no longer alive. His daughters are not counted in the census because only the sons are counted. So, Ela Lamanda Amal Boy Aretz Amay Tzlofchad. Then, what are they complaining about? The fact is, Halesed Lishko. The fact is, Tzlofchad is no longer alive. He can't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And the Boy Aretz Nitna Aretz. So, even if he had a son, the son wouldn't necessarily get anything by virtue of his father, because the son himself, only if he's above age. So they should be saying, not just that he doesn't have a son, but he doesn't have a son above 20 years old, they should be saying. So what do you mean? He doesn't have a son. Therefore, what's going to happen to his portion? What portion? The boy haaretz, neschalka haaretz. So the answer is, even according to that opinion, the boy aretz and schalka aretz, you could still say fine, but they're still concerned about ela lachazora. Even according to that opinion, the fact is, as we learned before, according to the opinion that the boy aretz and schalka aretz, we still say the fact is there was Hashem's promise to the Dor HaMidbar, that there was the Hashem's promise before Yetzias Mitzrayim, even that they were going to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And so we said, according to that opinion, we have chazara, that we take the portion that goes to their children and we return it to the parents who passed away in the Midbar, and we redivide it. So there's still that factor. So there's still that factor. It still has to. We still have to return it to Chefer, who was Slavchad's father, who was also one of those who left Mitzrayim, and then in turn it would go to his descendants, and Slavchad's daughters are included in that. The little benichsei Chefer, insofar as getting from Chefer's portion. So therefore, what they're saying is. Yes, the boy aretz neschalka aretz, and neither Chefer nor Tzlofchad made it into Eretz Yisrael. But they're saying that by rights, Tzlofchad himself, had he had a son, then that son would be inheriting. So then when Chefer's sons divide up the portion in Eretz Yisrael, then it would go back to Chefer and they would redivide it. And then from Chefer, it would go to all of his descendants. So then, therefore, our father Tzlofchad, having been a Bechor, would have gotten a double portion. And if Tzlofchad himself is not alive, but he has a son, then that son would inherit a double portion. So now he doesn't have a son. Then what's going on over here? How comes it that what our father would have gotten from Chefer by means of Chazara, he or his descendants would have gotten it? And even after all they're saying, if our father had ever had a son, then even if that son had left sons or daughters, they would get it instead, as we had learned in previous Mishnayos, that if the son is no longer alive, then you go down the tree of his descendants. So they knew all of that, and therefore, so they were pointing out that. problem is not even if we say the Boyer Aretz, the Schalke Aretz, they're saying, but if we had brothers, then if we had brothers, those brothers maybe wouldn't be inheriting on their own the Boyer Aretz, but we would still have Chazara, we would still return them the Nechosim to Chefer, and then we divide it among his descendants accordingly, as we learned yesterday, and therefore our father or our father's sons or their descendants would have a portion. And now that he doesn't have any sons, what's going to happen? So it works out even if we say Leboya Aretz and Schalka Aretz. Okay. In fact, the Rashbam points out later on when the Gemara analyzes the argument of Bnei Tzlofchad in more detail, it mentions that they were chachmonius, they were smart in Torah, they were wise in Torah, and they knew a number of the dinim that we've already learned in our perek, including the point that if there was a son and he's since passed away, that his descendants inherit. They knew that concept already. Either because it had already been told as part of the Torah, or because they had figured it out logically. Okay. The Gemara continues, Bishleim Lamanda Omar Liyotzi Mitzrayim. We can understand more easily the Psukim according to the opinion that says that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who left Mitzrayim. And again, therefore, in other words, a person left Mitzrayim, it doesn't matter the fact that he himself didn't make it to Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't even matter whether he has surviving children or sons of specifically above 20 years old who are in the second census who make it to Eretz Yisrael. Either way, the portion that he would have gotten is divided among his descendants. So if you say L'yotzi Mitzrayim Neschalka Aretz, Hanrukat Savchan B'nei Yosef, then we understand the complaint of B'nei Yosef. In Sefer Yoshua, it tells after they're in the process of dividing up Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim. And Bnei Yosef come to Yoshua with a problem. They say that we don't have enough land in Eretz Yisrael, basically. They're saying that they're complaining, why are you giving us only one area in Eretz Yisrael? We're so numerous. So if we say the Yotzim Mitzrayim Neschalka Aretz Tichtiv, and the Pasuk says, Vaydabru Bnei Yosef, it says the children of Yosef spoke and complained to Yoshua. So now they're saying, now Shevet Yosef, in particular Shevet Menashe, increased an enormous amount in the Midbar, more than any other Shvat, more than any other Shevet. When they left Mitzrayim, the first census in Parshas Bamidbar counts Shevet Menashe as being 32,000 and some. By the time it comes to the second census in Parshas Pinchas, they're 52,000 and some, so they increased by over 20,000. So now, if you say L'yotzi Mitzrayim L'schalka Aretz, then you understand what's going on. So in other words, they had an unusual increase more than any other Shevet. So they're arguing that now the problem is that so what is it then? So our fathers who left Mitzrayim altogether between them through the whole Shevet is getting only 32,000 and some portions. Now we have to redivide that among 52,000 people, and therefore each one is getting a smaller portion. But if you say that you go according to those who entered Eretz Yisrael, what's the problem? What are they complaining about? Kulo shokol. All of them got a portion, because now you have 52,000 and some in the last census, and therefore, each one of them is getting a portion. Now the Rashbam points out later on in the perek, we're going to discuss the point, which again there's a further machlokas rishonim about it between Rashi and the Ramban, whether in general when we talk about that when we talk about Eretz Yisrael was divided among the 12 shvatim, do we say a larger shevet got a larger portion, so that for example, let's say Shevet Yehuda, which has 70,000 some people in each census, is going to get a larger territory in Eretz Yisrael than let's say Shevet Binyamin, which is 32,000, which is 32,000 in the first census, and about 35,000 in the second, or 35,000 in the second one, whatever. So then, if you're going to say that the larger the Shevet, the bigger the portion they get, well, then in that case, so then for sure there's no problem. Shevet Menashe now being 52,000 is going to get a relatively larger portion. So then there should be no problem at all. However, the Gemara later on is going to discuss that point. Is that so, or do we say that each Shevet received an equal size portion in Eretz Yisrael, meaning therefore that a more numerous Shevet, like Yehuda, each person is getting a smaller plot of land than for example, a small shevet like Binyamin. Well, then in that case, then what? Then you could understand shevet. Then you can understand shevet Yosef's complaint in a different vein. They could say, in general, on the they could say on the shevet level, why are we getting a portion equal to each of the other shvatim when, after all, we have so many more than many of the other shvatim? However, the Rashbam points out the Gemara doesn't want to bring that up as an answer because we're going to discuss that point later on in the parak, and there's going to be a machlokas on that topic. So we on that point. So right now we want to understand according to both possible opinions as far as that, but we want to understand within what we're working with over here, whether you Yotze Mitzrayim or the Boya Oretz, the Schalka Oretz, that each portion, the size of each person's portion within the Shevet is determined by who left Mitzrayim or who came into Eretz Yisrael. So if you're going to say that, then if you're going to say it's divided according to those who came into Eretz Yisrael, then what's their problem? There's more of them now. So, okay, each of them is going to get a larger portion within their Shevet's territory. And the answer is, Mishum Tfolim to have an official who. The answer is because they had a lot of children. Namely, in other words, the Rashbam says they had, you think of it, it means, in other words, there were a lot of Yisoimim. Their fathers had passed away in the desert, and they themselves were not 20 years old when they came into Eretz Yisrael, nor did they have, again, if we say Leboya Aret, Neschalka Aret, then you can't go according to their fathers who left Mitzrayim, because according to that opinion, they themselves have to be 20 years old in order to even be in the running for getting a portion. So now they're saying that there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us who are going to end up without a portion altogether. that would be a way of explaining what their objection was to Yoshua. The Rashbam also points out in that connection, you would also have to say that they wouldn't have any other relative. For example, if their father had brothers, then still, according to the opinion of Labaya Aretz and Schalka Aretz, we still go back to the previous generation who left Mitzrayim and we divide it. So we would have to say, says the Rashbam, we're talking about that evidently a lot of these tefillim, a lot of these young men who were below 20 years old did not have a relative from whom they could from in the collateral line over there from whom they could inherit. And therefore, there would, in fact, end up being people who are not getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael at all. And therefore, they're complaining to Yeshua, what are we supposed to do? We have, there's a lot of us who are not going to get. In fact, there are Mephoshim on the Pasuk who explain that not only that, you have, as it is, in the census, in Parashas Pinchas, you have the Shevet had increased by 20,000 and some. But in addition, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, during the years when they were conquering and starting to divide Eretz Yisrael, the Shevet had increased even more, and therefore now they're complaining that our families are large and we're going to each be getting a small portion in Eretz Yisrael. That said, there are Rishonim who learn that we're Yisoimim. They're saying, in other words, that Poshet, we exactly that we have a larger number of children who have been born in the desert and whose parents are still alive, and even more so now after we came into Eretz Yisrael. And the result is, even Leboya Oretz and Schalka Oretz, fine, you have one person who was 20 at the time of the census in Parashas Pinchas, but since then he's had a bunch of children, and now you have, then it's a large family and only a small plot of land to support them. So therefore they're complaining to Yosef. Therefore, they're complaining to Yoshua and saying we ought to get a larger portion in Eretz Yisrael. In the end, by the way, the pasuk. So the Gemara now is going to quote shortly the pasuk that Yoshua answers them. He tells them go to the forest. In part, the Gemara is going to douche in that pasuk, but in Poshet Pshat, Yoshua tells them the fact is I can't give you a larger territory. However, in your territory, those areas that are forested, if you go and clear the forests over there, you'll have a large amount of space that you're able to build cities and settle in. So you'll have enough room after all. There is actually an interesting explanation the Malbim gives on the Psukim. You find in Psukim when it describes the territory of Shevet Yosef, of Menashe and Ephraim, It mentions that there were actually cities in the territories of nearby Shvatim that belonged to them. So the Malbim actually explains that that was an adjustment Yehoshua made. He couldn't adjust the actual borders of the Shvatim because those were determined by Goral and Ruach HaKodesh and the Urim V'Tumim, and etc., as the Gemara is going to explain later on in the Perek. But he learns that Yehoshua was able to adjust by saying that at least, fine, there are a lot of you, then fine, we'll take some cities that are in the borders of adjacent Shvatim, and those cities themselves, just not the land around them, will belong to you. In any case, that was the complaint of Shevet Yosef. So again, if we say Leyotzim Mitzrayim Neschalka Aretz, then their complaint is a little easier to understand because they had increased by so much in the Midbar. If you say Leboyim Aretz Neschalka Aretz, then there's still the complaint because there are a lot of Tfalim, there are a lot of under 20s who lost their parents, as the Rashbam learns, or under 20s who still have their parents but who were born after the census, as the Ramban and other Rishonim explain, and therefore they're complaining about that. So the Gemara says, Amar Abai, Shmamina, lo have a chad de lo shoklo. So Abai says, actually, you see from that whole conversation, and you see from this whole thing of Benos Tzlofchad and then the complaint of Shevet Menashe, that you see from that, in the end, there was not one single person who entered Eretz Yisrael who did not wind up getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael somehow or other. Meaning, in other words, if it weren't for Abaya telling us that, if it weren't for analyzing the Pesukim, You would think, based on everything we said before, there may well have been people who entered Eretz Yisrael without a portion of their own. Because if you say Leyotzim Mitzrayim Neschalka, then you could have then you would say anybody who was less than 20 when they left Mitzrayim wouldn't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael because their father had passed away in Mitzrayim and they themselves were below 20 by the first census. And if you said you went according to the second one, then conceivably you could have somebody who was born in the Midbar and was less than 20 and doesn't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So no, it came out, Hashem arranged it, that there was not a single one of the people who left Mitzrayim, who was less than 20 and was a Yosim, or that couldn't at least inherit from one of his relatives, from his brother or whatever. So according to Leboy Aretz and Schalka Aretz, everybody who came into Eretz Yisrael who was less than 20 years old, then they would have an ancestor, they would have a father who left Mitzrayim, and they would get a portion. So nevertheless, it came out that there wasn't anybody who was left without land at all. Because Abaya says, if there was any such situation where there would be somebody who doesn't get a portion, then he should have complained also, and the Pasuk would have recorded it for us. Just like we have Bnos Tzlofchad's complaint is recorded in the Torah, and just like we have Shevet Yosef's complaint is recorded in Sefer Yoshua, if there was anybody else in that situation, then it would have mentioned it as well. V'chitema, now you're going to answer the Tzavach V'ahani Kas V'kra. You could argue maybe the Pasuk only records complaints that actually resulted in a change to the matter. So with Benois Tzlofchad, they complained or they argued that they should get a portion, and in fact it worked out. Hashem decided in their favor, and you're going to argue that with Shevet Yosef as well. Nope. The fact is, Shevet Yosef complained and said that we should be entitled to a larger portion, the Loyahani, and it didn't actually help. They didn't get a larger portion out of Israel for Kasif Inukra, and yet the Pasuk records their complaint. So therefore, we see from that, says Abaya, now, according to the Malbim's explanation, I guess you could say that their complaint did have an effect because at least they got cities in other territories. But everybody else who doesn't learn that way, at least according to the straightforward sense of the Pesukim, Shevet Yosef, they complain. Yehoshua told them basically tough luck. The divisions of the Eretz Yisrael have been decided by the Urim V'Tumim and everything else, and we can't change them. So then it comes out their complaint in the end had no effect. The fact is they're not getting any larger portion in Eretz Yisrael, and yet the Pasuk takes the trouble to record their complaint. So we see from that, therefore, says Abaya, the Pasuk is mentioning complaints even when they didn't actually have a practical effect. Well, therefore we can see, had there been anybody else who was in a situation where they don't get, then the Pasuk would have recorded that as well. And the fact that it doesn't record that means there wasn't anybody. Hashem arranged it that either that everybody got a portion in Eretz Yisrael, whether we say the Yotze Mitzrayim or whether we say the Boya Aretz, the Schalka Aretz, either way, Hashem manipulated things and arranged things such that a person is always going to get a portion, whether through himself, whether through his father, whether through his father's brothers, etc. So the Gemara says, though, that's not really a solid proof, because you could say the reason why the complaint of Shevet Yosef was recorded is in fact because, even though it didn't help, because Hosam Eitz Tova Kamash Malon, because you could say that from the psukim, from the story of Shevet Yosef's complaint, you learn an Eitz Tova, you learn good advice. So in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, meaning in other words, so you could say that. You could say that no, the Pasuk's not going to bother recording every single person who came to Yoshua with a complaint. Here, where there came out an Eitz HaTovah because of it, then therefore Hashem took the trouble to tell Yoshua to record it in his Sefer. But that doesn't mean necessarily that there may not have been other people who were in a situation. They're not getting what they think they should get in Eretz Yisrael, and they come to Yoshua with complaints, but the Pasuk doesn't record it because there's nothing particular that we learn from that. Namely, what is the Eitz HaTovah? The boiler le'inish le'iz dehuri me'ena bisha. A person needs to be careful to protect himself from an ayin hara. So, v'hainu d'ka'amu lehu Yoshua. Namely, Yoshua tells them, d'chtiv. Yoshua answers them when they're saying, we have such a large number of us. And by the way, worth mentioning in this connection, they use the expression, the Gemara doesn't quote this part of the Pasuk, but they're saying that there are a lot of us, Asher ad koi berchani Hashem. Hashem has blessed us to such a degree. The word koi is 20 and 5. And in fact, Bala Torah makes an interesting point. The amount of difference between the first and second census, between Parshas Bamidbar and Parshas Pinchas, in that Shevet is 20,500. They went from 32,200 to 52,700, so it's a difference of 20,500. So they're hinting at that with the word koi representing. We have an increase of 20 as in thousands, and an increase of 5 as in hundreds, and therefore there are a lot of us. So Yeshua answers them. He says, so he says to them, the pasuk continues, Yeshua, im am rav ata, if you are such a numerous people, then go up to the forest. So in the simple sense, Yeshua is telling them again, there's a lot of forested areas in your territory. Go chop down the trees over there, and you'll have lots of cleared land that then you can use to build cities and farms and so forth. But the Gemara Darshins, Amaluhu, it means Yeshua is also telling them that you're telling us how many of you there are. Go hide yourself in the forests where there aren't so many people. And by the way, while you're there, you'll be chopping down the trees and clearing land. meaning, in other words, Rashbam says, it's hard to say that he's just telling them an Eitz HaTovah to chop down the trees, because what's the chiddush in that? Of course, whatever land they have in their territory, let them do with whatever they want. And of course, he's not giving them extra territory outside their portion. So therefore, so they don't need him to tell them, go chop down the trees in your portion. They could do that on their own. So therefore, the Gemara is davishing that he's telling them, go hide in the forest, shalei tishlet b'chem ayin ra, so that an ayin hara does not affect you, because you're boasting of how large your shevet is. So you could say that that's why the pasuk records that exchange, is to tell us that point about that he's giving them advice against ayin hara. Actually, interestingly, Ben Yehoyada has a different explanation of what we see about being careful from an ayin hara. He says we see it actually in the words that Shevet Yosef themselves use when they come and tell Yoshua, there are so many of us. They don't just say there are so many of us. They use the expression ad asher ad koi berchani Hashem, that Hashem has blessed us to such a degree. So, meaning, in other words, that they themselves are realizing we shouldn't just boast of how large we are to protect ourselves against an ayin hara. An effective way to do that is to recognize that Hashem is the one who gave us that goodness. Because there are a number of explanations what the how exactly is Ayin Hara supposed to affect a person anyway, because somebody else looks at something or someone, therefore it should have a bad effect. There's a number of different explanations among Mefarshim how exactly it works, but one idea is that when a person is flaunting his good fortune or whatever, and it causes other people to be jealous of him, then it causes Hashem to start judging and seeing, well, does he taka deserve that? So now when they're acknowledging openly that this is Hashem gave it to us, then that blunts that harsh judgment against them. Anyway, so Ben Yehoyada explains that the effect against the Ayin Hara is actually in what they say. But in addition, there's also Yoshua is saying, if that's not enough, then go hide yourselves in the forests. Omrule, but the Gemara continues. Now this is not in the Psukim. But this is the Gemara Darshins, that this was the continuation of the conversation. Omrule, they told him, we don't need to do that. Anan Mizara de Yosef, we are from the descendants of Yosef. And Ayin Hara is ineffective against it. Actually, the Rashbam says, we do actually have a hint to it in the Pasuk, because they continue, Lo Yimotze Lanu Ha-Hor. The mountain is not going to be found for us. Now, in the simple sense, what they're saying by that is, you're telling us, go clear areas in the mountains and we can settle over there. The fact is, they're saying that mountainous area is not really, we don't really have it. It's not enough for us. Even if we settle that whole area, it's not going to be enough for us. But now that Rashbam is saying, in terms of the Gemara's Derasha, it means they're also saying that the mountain is unnecessary for us. The mountain, which has the forests on it, is unnecessary for us to hide in there, because we're immune to the Ayin Hara. D'lo shalta be'ein abisha, Ayin Hara is ineffective against Shevet Yosef. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says in Yaakov's Baracha to the Shevet, Bein Poras Yosef, Yosef is a fruitful son, Bein Poras Alei Oyin, a fruitful son, alei oyin. So the simple meaning of alei oyin means on the well. But I'll take alei ayin, alei oyle ayin. Don't read alei ayin on the well or on the spring or whatever, but rather oyle ayin, that they overcome and they surmount. They're higher than the ayin hara. There are various other explanations and gersois among the Rishonim what exactly the drosha is. One is that we don't even need to change the word alei to olei, but rather the word alei itself we can re-understand as ali, like go away, ayin, you have no power, go away, ayin hara, you have no power over Shevet Yosef. Whatever the case, Shevet Yosef is immune to the ayin hara. So they're saying that we don't need to worry about it. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina says we have a different pasuk, expresses the same point earlier in Yaakov's bracha to Shevet Menashe and Ephraim. He says v'yidgul aroy v'karav aretz, they should multiply like fish in the land. Meaning, mad dogim shabayam, my machasim aleihem, just like fish in the sea are covered by water. Va'ena ayin shalatas behem, and therefore an eye is not able to see them, and therefore they're immune to ayin hara. Af zara shal Yosef, ena ayin shalatas behem. The same way the descendants of Yosef, the ayin hara has no power over them. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains that Shevet Yosef was zoicha to that bracha because Yosef controlled his eyes when it comes to the whole matter of Potiphar's wife. And he didn't look where he wasn't supposed to. So for that, he and his descendants gain that bracha of being immune to Ayin Hara. Elsewhere, the Gemara mentions, in fact, in that connection, first of all, it mentions Rabbi Yochanan, and it says it was from Shevet Yosef, and therefore one time when the Chachamim asked him, isn't he concerned about an Ayin Hara, then he answers with the same point that he's from Shevet Yosef. But there's actually, we find that actually, in a certain sense, the whole Jewish people are considered to descend from Yosef, in the sense that Yosef supported the whole Jewish people during the years in Mitzrayim, and therefore he's considered almost on the level of the Avos. And the Gemara in Brachas has an expression that if you have a person is concerned about a situation of Ayin Hara, then he should say a certain line that includes the point, I am from Shevet Yosef, on whom Ayin Hara has no effect. So in short, they're telling Yehoshua, you're telling us that we have to go to the forests in order to be safe from an Ayin Hara. We don't have to worry about that because we're Shevet Yosef and we're immune to that in the first place. And Mao Shah points out the word Ya'ar itself stands for the abbreviation Yisalek Ayin Ra, that the being in the forest will take away the Ayin Hara, and they're telling him we don't have to worry about that. Okay, in any case, the point is, the Gemara is saying, so the Pasuk may have recorded this whole discussion between Shevet Yosef and Shevet Yeshua, not because any practical change in the division of Eretz Yisrael came about as a result of it, but rather because from it we learn this whole thing about Ayin Hara. That doesn't mean necessarily that there may not have been other people who didn't get a portion for one week because they didn't have a father who left Mitzrayim at age 20, or according to the Yotzei Mitzrayim, Neschalka Aretz, or vice versa, they themselves were below 20 when they came into Eretz Yisrael. So it may well be, here Abaya was telling us, that in fact there was no such situation, and every single person ended up getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael somehow, because otherwise it would have recorded his complaint. So now the Gemara is saying, maybe not necessarily. Maybe there were such people, and the Pasuk doesn't record their complaint because nothing practical came of it. Next, there had been a Braisa that discussed details that after we went through the three opinions of how Eretz Yisrael was divided among Yotzei Mitzrayim, among Boy Haaretz, or either one. So then the Braisa had continued. Meraglim, as far as the Meraglim who lost their portion in Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua and Kalev, not Lechelkam, Yeshua and Kalev got the portions that would have gone to them. Meaning, as we learned over there, it means, in other words, even if the Meraglim left children, and ordinarily those children would have Yarshin land in Eretz Yisrael, at least by virtue of their fathers, the Meraglim who left Mitzrayim over 20 years old, but the Meraglim forfeited it, and therefore it went to Yeshua and Kalev. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, where do we see that? Because the Pasuk says after it describes what happened, how it describes how the Meraglim died, so it says Yeshua ben Nun v'Chole ben Yefuna chayu min ha'anashim ahem. It says Yeshua ben Nun and Chole ben Yefuna lived from among those people. Now my chayu. What do you mean by the word chayu? Ilema chayu mamash. Do you just mean exactly what it sounds like? They lived. What's the chiddush? You have a different pasuk that tells us that when it lists at the end of the census in Parshas Pinchas, it says not among all these people who were counted, not one of the ones from the original census was still there. No, not one man was left. Except for those two, so we know that they survived all the years in the Midbar. The pasuk doesn't have to tell us. Ella my choyu. So what does the word choyu mean? Shechoyu b'chelkam means they lived in their portion in Eretz Yisrael. Marsha points out Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Hachayim. So here the Meraglim forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, and there's even an opinion in Sanhedrin that they lost their portion in Masechta Sanhedrin in Perek Chelek that they lost their portion Olam Haba as well, which is the real Eretz Chaim. And in any case, Yeshua and Kalev gained their portion in Eretz Yisrael as well as the portion that would have gone to the Meraglim. So that's the choyu, means they lived and they actually inherited their portion. Bala Torim on the Pasuk points out that if you take the letters of Atbash of the word choyu and you take the gematria of those letters, then you have the gematria of the word bechelkam, which means that they actually inherited their portion and they took it over. Next, that same Braisa had said, Mesloinenin v'adas korach, the complainers in the Midbar. Now, on the face of it, Mesloinenin means the various people who complained at different times in the Midbar. And adas korach, we know what that is. So now the Gemara is going to analyze that part of the Braisa. So the Braisa had said, Lohoylohen chelik baretz, they did not have a portion now to Israel. So the Gemara asks, "V'hatanya? We learn in a different brayse, Meraglim Mislonenim Vadas Korach Yeshua V'Kolav Not Luchelkam." Here we're saying that the brayse that we quoted on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis says, as far as the Meraglim Yeshua and Kolav got their portion, but as far as the Mislonenim and Vadas Korach, they forfeited their portion entirely, and there's no particular person who took it over. Namely, it just means that everybody else's portion and their shevet was enlarged a little bit because of them. So you have, let's say, for example, among Adas Korach, you have, let's say, Dosan and Aviram. They were from Shevet Reuven. So now the result is that their portion in Eretz Yisrael was forfeited. So fine, it means that it wasn't forfeited completely. It means that Shevet Reuven now gets, each person in Shevet Reuven gets a slightly larger sliver of land in Eretz Yisrael than they would have, because Dothan and Aviram aren't there. And the same thing, and the same thing with the Masloidanim. But here we have another Braisa that says that Yeshua and Kalev got their portion. So meaning, in other words, let's say with Dasan Aviram's portion, according to that, it didn't remain within Shevet Reuven. It went to Yeshua and Kalev. So what is it? And the answer is like Kasha. The answer is there's no Kasha. It is true that the Braises contradict each other, but it depends how we look at it. Mar Makash Masloidanim Lamaraglim. The second Braisa that we just quoted, that says that all of that was given to Yeshua and Kalev, he compares the Mislonim to the Meraglim. And since by the Meraglim it's clear that Yeshua and Kalev got their portion, because we just said, so when it comes to the Mislonim and Adas Korach, then this Tana holds that the same thing was true of them. And the first Braisa on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis does not make that comparison. So he says, true, Meraglim, it says in the Pasuk, but as far as the Meslonim, we have no source for that, so therefore we have no reason to say that it went to Yoshua and Kalev. We say that it would just remain within the Shevet. So to Tanya, as in fact we learn in another Braisa that helps clarify the matter. So the Rashbam explains, in other words, one way of looking at it, we could say that since when Slofchad's daughters come with their argument, they mention that Slofchad was not among the Meraglim or the Misoinim or Adas Korach. So therefore, we can learn that says that opinion that we have a hekesh between all of them. So what applies to one applies to all of them. Whereas the other opinion says that no, because the pasuk doesn't say v'hanoyadim, it doesn't have a vova there. It just says hanoyadim. So therefore, it means it's a separate thing. The Meraglim is one thing, hanoyadim al Hashem adas korach is a different thing. So to Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Let's analyze the words that Bnos Slofchad used. Avinu meis b'midbar, when they say our father died in the midbar, zet Slofchad, that refers to Slofchad. Okay, there's no real chiddush in pointing out that. We know that their father's name was Slofchad, but that's just by way of introduction to the rest of the braisa. And they continue. They say he was not part of the congregation. What congregation? Meaning they're saying that Zadas Meraglim. He was not part of the congregation of the Meraglim. He was not one of the ten Meraglim themselves. The ten Meraglim themselves are called Eda. In fact, the very fact that a minion consists of 10 people, we learn from the fact that there were 10 bad Meraglim and they're called an Eda. This was actually in Tanya a day or two ago. After we learn a gzeira shava from the word, it says v'nikdashti b'soich b'nei Yisrael, and you have he bodla mitoicha eda hazois. So we learn a gzeira shava that an eda over there means 10, and therefore that it means that a minion consists of 10 people. Anyway, so when they say v'hulah heod b'soicha eda, they mean he was not one of those 10 meraglim. So therefore, he shouldn't have forfeited his portion in Eretz Yisrael. Hanoi odim al Hashem, they continue, those who assembled against Hashem, elu mislonim, that refers to the mislonim, to the ones who complained against Hashem in the midbar, and ba'adas Korach, and when it continues in the congregation of Korach, kamashmoi, then that means exactly what it sounds like, the people who joined together with Korach. So they were saying that Slofchad was not part of any of those groups. So therefore, he shouldn't have forfeited and his portion in Eretz Yisrael, but now that he doesn't have sons, what do we do? So we see that there were three groups mentioned in the pasuk: the Meraglim, the Misloinim, and Adas Korach. So now, Mar Makish Misloinim, the Meraglim. So now, one Braisa, the one that we learned just now at the beginning of this part of the Sugya, says that we have a Hekesh then, since the Misloinim are mentioned right after the Meraglim, then it means the same thing applies to both of them. Since the Meraglim's portion in Eretz Yisrael was given to Yeshua and Kalev, then the same thing is true as far as the Misloinim. Omalog Makish Misloinim Lemeraglim, whereas the other opinion does not hold of that Hekish. And because, again, because there's no vav between them, if it had said v'hulai hayu b'secha eda v'hanoyadim, then it would mean that, yes, we compare them, but without the vav, says this opinion, which is the author of the Braisa, Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, says that no, then the noyadim al Hashem and the Adas Korach is a separate group. Yes, they forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, which is why B'nai Slavchad are pointing out that he wasn't in those groups, but their portion was not forfeited and sent out of their shevet and given to Yeshua and Kalev, but rather it was redivided among the shevet themselves. Okay. So the Gemara points out, now if we're saying the Misloinonim over here, the Misloinonim, it sounds like, I mean, you have many times when the Jewish people complained in the Midbar. You have over and over in the Psukim, you have the expression Vayiloinu Om, that the people complained against Moshe. So the question is, you're telling me that it was a very substantial portion of the people, maybe not every single person, but at least when you have Vayiloinu Ha'am over and over, then it means it was a very large fraction of the people. So for Amaleh Papa Labaya, Ulamand Makish Misloinim L'Meraglim, according to the opinion that the Misloinim are like the Meraglim, meaning, in other words, therefore, that you're saying that Yeshua and Kalev got their portion, Ichbu Yeshua v'Kalev v'Yorosu l'Kula Eretz Yisrael, does it come out therefore that Yeshua and Kalev got such a large increase in their Nachla and they ended up taking over most of Eretz Yisrael? Because after all, it's one thing if you say the Misloinim each time forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, but it remained within their Shevet. Okay, so it means their Shevet is still taking over that territory in Eretz Yisrael, and it means each person is getting a bit of a larger portion than they otherwise would have. But if you're telling me that, if you're telling me they all went to Yeshua and Kalev, so every single Shevet's Nachla was reduced by that much and went to Yeshua and Kalev. The fact is that Ashbam says, if we look at the Psukim, we find Kalev was given the area of Hebron, Yeshua was given a city in Eretz Yisrael in the territory of Shevet Ephraim called Timnas Serach. We don't really find that there was such a large portion of Eretz Yisrael that went to them. So if you're telling me the Misloinim lost their portion in Eretz Yisrael and it went to Yeshua and Kalev, then what's going on over here? The Marshal actually discusses the Rashbam over here, mentions the point that it wouldn't literally mean all of Eretz Yisrael. It would mean most of Eretz Yisrael, but okay, because otherwise if it meant all the Jewish people, there's no reason to single out Meraglim and Adas Korach. But then he goes on to point out that what's the Hava Amina anyway? Because they complained, for example, in Mora, right after Kriyas Yamsuf, they complained about water. They didn't have water. You're going to tell me because of that they should forfeit their portion in Eretz Yisrael? Adarabi, you see from the Psukim over there that Hashem is Shom Sam Lechoko Mishpat Shom Niso, and Hashem is telling them Im Shamoya Tishma. So what Misloinim would we be talking about anyway? And he goes on and discusses in detail what Rav Papa is asking about the Misloinim, what Misloinim is he thinking of? So he ends up saying he's thinking of the ones maybe who complain when the Meraglim came back with their report. So fine, we would talk about the Meraglim, then we would talk about the Misloinim, meaning what happened? The Meraglim came back, but the 10 of them came back with a bad report, and that night, Vayisu Kolo'edo Vayivku, everybody was crying, all the men were crying that night. So now, the Gemara is assuming, or Papa is assuming, that they are the Misloinim, who are described over here, and we're saying, once they said, we don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, then maybe therefore they forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael. But again, the question is, and in fact, you see from the following Psukim, Hashem says, yeah, they're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Their children are going to go in. But the question is that if you're telling me that their portion went to Yeshua and Kalev, well, then it means Yeshua and Kalev would have gotten a substantial portion of Eretz Yisrael. Omalei, so Rabbi answers him, Mislonim Sheba Abdas Kodach Kamrinim. We don't mean when we say Mislonim Va Abdas Kodach, we don't mean two separate groups, Mislonim, those who complain, and separately Adas Kodach. We mean the Mislonim of Adas Kodach, meaning in other words, Adas Kodach would be Kodach himself and his family, and Mislonim Vadas Kodach would be the 250 Roshei Sanhedrin who went along with it. So we're saying they forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, and that portion was given to and that portion was so according to one opinion, that portion also went to Yeshua and Kalev, and according to the other opinion, that portion was redivided among their among the rest of their shevet. But the rest of the Mislonim, the rest of the people who complained in the rest of the people who complained in the Midbar, no problem. They themselves didn't forfeit their portion because of it. They themselves didn't make it alive into Eretz Yisrael. Their descendants did. Their children did. But nevertheless, their children definitely, according to both opinions, received their respective portions. And then the Rashash gives a different argument. The Rashash says maybe the Mislonim that we're talking about when we say Mislonim Badas Kodach, maybe we mean over here is you have after the story, after Kodach, after the whole thing with Kodach and his descendant and his family and all of their hangers on getting swallowed up into the desert. After that, you have a pasuk that says that people complained to Moshe and said, Atam Amitim as Am Hashem, what are you doing? You caused Jews to die. And then there was a plague. So maybe that would be Mislonim Badas Kodach. Okay, one way or the other, we're not talking about such a large fraction of the Jewish people. Okay, the Gemara continues. Then her papa has another question for Abaya. Going back to, again, the different opinions about how Eretz Yisrael was divided, it's easy to understand, according to the opinion, that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who left Mitzrayim and were counted in the first census. So later on, after the Pasuk, when the Pasuk describes in Sefer Yoshua how Shevet Yosef received their territory, Menashe and Ephraim received their territory, so the Pasuk says, Vayiplu Chavle Menashe Asara. It says that Menashe received 10 large portions in Eretz Yisrael. So we don't mean the individual portions per person. We're talking about large areas of land that then were divided individually among the individual families. So how do we get 10? So we say, so very simple. Shita, the Shita Bote Ovis. You have six that go to the six Bote Ovis, because in the Pasuk before that, and also in the census in Parshas Pinchas, it mentions that you had the various sub-families, the various clans of Shevet Menashe. You have, there was Machir, there was Gilad, and you have Gilad's various children. Each of them formed a large family of a couple of thousand people. So you have six. So each of them got one large territory, which then was split up among the individuals. Va'arba did who? And then you have Bnei Tzlachar, themselves got four portions, namely the portion that would have gotten to that would have gone to Tzlofchad, because again he was one of Yotzei Mitzrayim, two portions of Chefers, because Tzlofchad was a Bechor, as we learned in the Mishnah. And then also you would have that Tzlofchad had a brother, as the Gemara is going to point out soon. He had a brother who passed away in the Midbar without any children, and Tzlofchad would have inherited his portion, and therefore it goes to his daughters. So that's the 10 men. But if you say that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, Tmania, then you really only have eight. Shita de Shita Bote Ovis. Again, you have six for the six Bote Ovis, the six large subfamilies of Shevet Menashe. Utrei did who? And then all you would have is two portions that go to that go to Bnei Tzlofchad. Namely, again, Tzlofchad himself did not make it into Eretz Yisrael. So if we say Leboy Oritz Neschalka, then we don't have a portion of his own. All we have is we have Chazara. We have that the land that Hefer's various children would have gotten returns to Hefer, and then it's redivided among Hefer's descendants. Hefer himself having been one of those who left Mitzrayim. So now all of his children are inheriting, and Bnei Tzlofchad would get a double portion because Tzlofchad was the Bechor. So all you'd have then is two portions for Bnei Tzlofchad plus six for the six Bote Ovis, so you only have eight. So according to that opinion, Leboy Ha'aretz, Neschalka Ha'aretz, then how is the Pasuk saying that there were ten, that there were ten of them, that there were ten portions? So to shit to shit about the others, or today did who hotmania? So you have only eight. So the Gemara answers back, really tight meich, nu, according to your svara, the papa, that you're asking the question, even if you say that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who left Mitzrayim, you still on the face of it don't have 10. Tes havu, you really only have 9 on the face of it, because you still have 1 for Tzlafchad and 2 for the portions of Chefer. Ela my islach meima. How do you get the 10th portion according to you? Chad acha de abba havalahu. Tzlafchad had one brother who passed away in the desert childless, and therefore his other brothers, Tzlafchad being one of them, inherit his portion, and then it goes to his daughters. Hachinami, the same way. You can answer, even if you say the boy arts and schalka arts, today achad abba havalahu. You would say that that Tzlafchad had 2 brothers who passed away childless in the desert. So therefore, so again, you have Laboya Aretz and Schalka Aretz, but these brothers were not among Boya Aretz. So instead, all the brothers, all the other surviving brothers get it. And they would have gotten it by being Yotze Mitzrayim. Instead, it goes back to Chefer, and then it gets redivided among their brothers. So Bnei Tzlafchad therefore get a portion from what their father would have gotten from his two brothers, from his two brothers Yerusha. So that Ashbam explains, in other words, that what happened was Chefer passed away, and then these brothers were alive, and then therefore then and then later on they passed away, and therefore they yaushened from him, and now each one goes and now each one goes to his now each one goes to his brother. Tosfos discusses that and has some questions on it, and says that So it comes out, in other words, the point is, if those brothers of Tzlafchad had passed away before Chefer, then in fact we wouldn't say that it would go back to Chefer, because then since if we're saying the boy Aretz and Schalka Aretz, they were not among boy Aretz. So the Rashbam explains, in other words, that Rav Papa, who asked the question, figured, sure, it's easy enough to say that Tzlafchad had one brother who passed away, because we're going to see that from later on, the Gemara is going to daushin from Sukkim, how many, what was going on over here, but to say that there were two brothers, and we don't really have a pasuk that says that, then it seems very hard to say that, but Abaya tells him, nevertheless, so once we're saying that there was one, then it's not a problem to say that there were two, and to use that to explain according to the opinion that says the boy arts and schalka arts. So Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, when the pasuk says, when Hashem tells Moshe after Bnos Tzlachod's argument, Hashem tells him Nosin Titan Lahem. So the expression is the expression of the pasuk is, you know, that Bnos Tzlachod are speaking correctly. Nosin Titan Lahem Achuzas Nachla. You should certainly give them a portion of inheritance. B'seicha Chayaviem, together with their father's brothers. Va'avarta Es Nachlas Aviem Lahem. You should pass along the inheritance of their father to them. So the Braisa darshins. The Braisa Daushans, the wording in the pasuk Nosen Titan Lahen, when it says you should certainly give to them Zu Nachla Savihen, that means the Nachla their father himself would have gotten because the Yotze Mitzrayim, because he was from Yotze Mitzrayim. B'soicha Chei Avihen, when it continues among their father's brothers Zu Nachla Savi Avihen, that refers to the Nachla that would have gone to their grandfather Chefer, and Tzlafchad gets a portion of it. Va'avartas nachlas avien lahen, and when it says you should pass along the nachla of their father to them, zuchelik bechora, that refers to that they should get the portion of bechora that Tzlafchad would have gotten being the firstborn. So the Braisa finishes off. Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov Omer af chelik achi aviyam notlu. They also got a portion that would have gone to their father's brother. Shenema nosen titin, because the double expression nosen titin means that there was an extra portion as well. So therefore, so it means that they had a brother as well. Now the Rashbam points out, even the Tanakhama of the Braisa does agree that there was a brother, because as the Gemara is going to point out later on, which we'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, the fact that it says Achuzas Nachla means that there was a Nachla that he inherited from his brother. But the Tanakhama doesn't hold that we should darshan anything from Nos and Titin, because Dibra Torah Koloshim Ne'adam. So he holds that there was just one brother, whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that there were two. So now Abaye says to the Papa, based on that, if you say that there were two brothers of Tzlafot who passed away without any children in the desert, then you could say that's why there's an extra portion that's going to Bnei Tzlafot, and therefore that still has, we can still say therefore that there are four portions altogether going to Bnei Tzlafot. Now when you add to that the six portions for the six Batei Avos that constitute the rest of Shevet Menashe, then there's the 10 portions that are referred to in the Pasuk in Yeshua. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, analyzing more about this detail of the division of Eretz Yisrael, and get into a more detailed discussion of Bnei Slavchad's argument and all of that.
Shkayach.
Here.